going to start it.
And welcome back to Sports in the Morning. I'm Zach, alongside Gavin. And today we have a very special guest, Jake Eisenberg. Jake, thank you very much for joining us.
Yes.
And here's a quick PSA.
Over 45 million Americans are directly impacted by addiction. Addiction is the leading cause of death for people under the age of 30, and since 2013, addiction-related deaths have increased by 6.5%. Most people don't look for resources because they can't admit to their struggles, and friends and family often don't know what they could do to help. Using powerful stories that portray the modern faces of addiction, the Listen campaign speaks to the friends and family of those struggling with addiction, encouraging them to listen and start the conversation about addiction with their loved ones, driving them to the tips and resources housed on the campaign's microsite, heretolisten.com.
And here's a quick promo. Come on down this Friday night at 6 p.m. to watch the football team take on Westbury, first senior night if you would like to. So, as we said before, we have Jake Eisenberg here joining us today. Jake is from Port Washington. He's broadcasted for the Atlantic 10 Conference, the Richmond Flying Squirrels, Wake Forest, Davidson, Big East Network, the Omaha Storm Chasers, the New York Mets, and now the Kansas City Royals. Jake, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you guys for having me. Yeah, it's become a bit of a longer list, but glad to siphon it down to mostly just the Royals nowadays.
Yeah, that's great. So for the first question, when did you find out that broadcasting would be a path that you would like to take?
To be honest, I went to college at the University of Maryland thinking that I wanted to be a sports writer. I was the sports editor of the Schreiber Times when I was a senior in high school, and I thought that's the route that I wanted to take. And I didn't really start focusing on play-by-play until I really got the chance to do play-by-play for the first time with the student radio station at the University of Maryland, WMUC Sports. And that was, you know, within weeks of stepping on campus for the first time. But in actuality, the first time that I got the chance to do play-by-play of any kind was with WDOT Sports. I called one quarter of one basketball game. It was Port Washington against Massapequa. I sat in the bleachers on the right side of the gym. They were these light brown wooden bleachers at the time. I sat three quarters up the way near the top. I had a roster in each hand. I didn't really know anyone's name or what I was doing. I still have the tape. I still listen to it every now and again. And it's nice to know kind of where you've come from.
Jake, how does that sound in comparison to where you are now?
Thankfully, it sounds a lot different. I'd like to think that I've gotten a little bit better from those first basketball calls on WDOT Sports. But the thing that stands out to me about it is that just the chance to do it, the chance to do something without having any idea what you're doing. I mean, I sat in those bleachers having not done any preparation, not really having a great grasp of the rules of high school basketball, not really knowing any of the technical elements of play-by-play or how to handle a broadcast, and we just kind of did it. And the best way to learn how to do something is by just to do it. And thankfully, the more you do it and the more you reach out for help, the better you get, and thankfully that's what's happened.
Yeah, so when you were at Maryland, what were some of the tips that you were given by the professor? By the professors that shape you into the broadcaster that you are today?
Sure. I mean, first and foremost, it's kind of like I just said, go and do it. Get as many reps as you can in whatever sports you can, just to gain the experience in calling games and figuring out what your sound is and how you sound, and maybe in some ways how you should sound. And you kind of blend those things together. And then in terms of, you know, more tangible technical feedback, there are things within different sports, like with baseball. It's when you're on the radio, you've got to make sure you say, here's the pitch. You got to let the listener know that a pitch is coming. That's the number one thing for baseball on the radio. For basketball, it might be learning kind of the broadcast vocabulary and the locations on the court, top of the key, right side wing, low left block, foul line, elbow, those sorts of things that can help all of those descriptions that you give over the radio and help whoever's listening paint that picture in their heads.
Right. So when you were at Schreiber, did you ever broadcast baseball? Because you said earlier that it was basketball, that was the only sport, the one quarter that you did.
Yeah, we didn't do a whole lot of play-by-play when I was a student. I think it was something that we were kind of just starting to begin doing, but it wasn't something that anybody was consistently doing. And I never had the chance to call baseball in high school. I was on the baseball team my junior year. I played JV, freshman, sophomore year, varsity, junior year. I'm using the word play pretty strongly because I didn't play all that much. And then I played tennis on the varsity team my senior year. But I never really got the chance to do any play-by-play for baseball. But one kind of broadcast-related thing I did, every year the baseball team would have a strikeout cancer game. And yeah, that was the only game all year where we would bring in a speaker and a microphone to, you know, do some walk-up music or announce the batters coming to the plate. And, you know, because I wasn't really playing, that became my job. So I got to say who was coming up, and I hit play on the walk-up music, and that was about as close to doing any sort of baseball play-by-play as I got in high school.
Wow. So next, going on to our next question, we have, was baseball always your favorite to broadcast at Maryland?
I think so. I think that baseball is the sport that I know the best. It's the sport that I grew up playing the most and played at the highest level. Again, not very well, but still, you know, a game that I played at the highest level that I could. And so I had a much greater knowledge of it. It's also the sport that I was the biggest fan of, listening to Howie Rose and Gary Cohen call Mets games when I was growing up. And so when I got to Maryland and I had the chance to call baseball and kind of be in that environment myself, that's the thing that I enjoyed the most. The thing that I enjoy the most about calling baseball is that it's a blank canvas. There's so much space to describe the things that you see and so many different things that can happen at any given moment and in any given game. You're never going to see the same game twice, and you're always going to see something that you've never seen before and may never see again. And that's not to say that calling other sports is a little different. The pace of football is much more rigid. You have the snap, you have the play, then you're setting up the next play. Basketball is kind of constant, up and down the floor, up and down the floor. And so there's just a little bit less space with those sports specifically to share some stories or paint a more detailed picture. But, you know, calling basketball and football have their own technical challenges of making sure you're describing the play as best you can. So every sport has the thing that makes calling that sport fun, but baseball is definitely the one that I enjoy the most.
Right. So we know that getting a job in this field is very, very difficult. Was there ever a time that you thought about giving up and maybe doing something else or going into a different profession?
Sort of, but maybe not in the way that you're describing. I got pretty lucky coming out of college to get a job with the Brooklyn Cyclones. That was my first job in professional baseball. And from there, you get better. You meet people. They help you. And that led me to Winston-Salem, the Winston-Salem Dash, which led me to the Richmond Flying Squirrels, which led me to the Omaha Storm Chasers, which led me to the New York Mets, and now over to the Kansas City Royals. If there was a time where I considered doing something else, it probably was in 2020, during the pandemic, when the minor league season was canceled. And I had nowhere to broadcast, and there was really no sense of whether or not minor league baseball was going to be back in the way that we knew it before. And luckily enough, it did. But during that non-season in 2020, yeah, there were certainly thoughts and doubts about what I might do if, you know, that Storm Chasers job isn't waiting for me on the other side, or something else changes and forces me to have to make a decision about what direction my career is going to go.
Yeah, so next question. When you broadcasted with the New York Mets, when you were filling in for Howie Rose, was that just a dream come true for you after growing up on Long Island and going to these Mets games?
Oh, yeah. No, it was completely surreal. I mean, just to be considered to fill in for him was one thing, but then to luck into, you know, being given that role and being handed that trust to fill in for a Mets Hall of Famer, and in my opinion, a future, you know, baseball Hall of Famer and one of the best broadcasters of all time. Yeah, it was a pinch me moment every single time, not just filling in for him when I was lucky enough to do so, but having the chance to call a handful of games with him. I did 4 games with Howie at Citi Field, and each time it was like some sort of out-of-body experience. And I remember specifically the first game that I called with Howie, it was a doubleheader at Citi Field against the Cardinals. And I remember sitting just to Howie's right during the ninth inning, and, you know, there were two outs, and the Mets were an out away from a win. And I remember, instead of watching the field, I just turned to my left, and I looked at him, because so many times in my life, I've listened to the radio, and I've heard him exclaim, "Put it in the books."
Yep.
I've never seen him say it in person. And so I really wanted to make sure that with the Mets on the precipice of a win, I watched him say, "Put it in the books," so I could remember exactly what that looks like and marry that with all of these childhood memories of hearing him say that when the Mets win a game. And that was a really special moment among many.
Yeah, so how much preparation do you have to, do you look at their stats? What do you look at going into these games? And how does Howie Rose, how did he teach you, perhaps?
Sure. I think it's different depending on the sport and depending on the game. I mean, if you want, you can think about it like this. You know, there's some subjects in school that you're really, really good at, and you can walk into the classroom and take a test cold, and you can do all right. And there are some tests that you have to study for a lot, and you probably study a lot more for the final exam than you do for, you know, a midweek quiz, so to speak. And games can sometimes be like that. If there's a team that you're seeing for the fourth or fifth time, you might have a little bit less legwork to do than a team that you're seeing for the first time, where you really have to introduce all the players, not just to yourself, but to the audience that you're tuning into. And so I think that within the baseball season, there's some variance there. But in terms of what you're looking at certainly statistics. You're looking at trends, which players are hot, which players are cold. How have these players done against one another? If there's some matchup history between the pitcher and the batter, what stories can you tell? I mean, maybe there's something topical about how a player has adjusted his batting stance and how that stance has helped him. Or maybe there's something he's going through off the field that he's willing to let you share. Maybe, you know, in one case, I remember one of the Royals players got engaged this year while we were in Chicago near his hometown. And then the very next day he hit a home run. And that's, you know, a story that you can tell about him popping the question and then popping a homer. And as far as what I learned from Howie, and it's not just something that I learned from him when we had the chance to call games together, but over the years, he's been kind enough to give me some feedback. And over the years, I've certainly listened to him, and you can learn a lot from listening. You don't always necessarily need to talk to the person specifically to learn something from them. And from Howie, I learned that baseball play-by-play on the radio isn't just about giving the relevant statistics or telling the specific story about a player's background. It's a conversation. It's sitting next to the person and laughing with them and joking with them and relating to them.
Right.
I remember I was listening to a game with my dad during the 2020 season, and Howie made some Seinfeld reference that I thought was hilarious. And then later in the inning, Pete Alonso hit an RBI double. And I remember talking to my dad later. He was listening to the game in his car on his way home from work. I was listening to the game somewhere else. And he got home and we were talking about it. I was like, "Did you hear the Seinfeld reference that Howie made?" I didn't ask him if he heard how Howie called the RBI double. I asked him if he'd heard the Seinfeld reference, because that's the thing that I related to, that I knew that he also related to, that we can then share and laugh together at and with. And so I think from Howie, I learned that baseball on the radio is a lot about that shared experience. It's a lot about that relatability. And that doesn't always come from telling you players on base percentage.
Yeah, I know that Zach and I, when we first started our podcast, we were very, like, right into the stats, not really laughing about much. But as we've gone along, we've gone into debates, we just started yelling at each other. And I think we learned a lot of that from Mr. Claff, who tried to push us to do that sort of thing. And going into our next question, have you made any relationships with any of the players in your short tenure as a broadcaster?
Oh, sure. I mean, these are people that you're around every single day from the beginning of spring training until the end of the season. And in my case, I was the broadcaster for the Omaha Storm Chasers for 2 years, which is the Royals' AAA affiliate. And the Royals right now have a team comprised a lot of players that played for the Storm Chasers over the last few years. So, you know, in cases of guys like Bobby Witt Jr. and MJ Melendez and Nick Prado and Michael Massey and Vinny Pasquantino and Kyle Isbell and Michael Garcia and Drew Waters, and that's just on the position player side. These are all guys that I was with in AAA. You know, we were riding the bus to Des Moines together for a AAA game, or went up to St. Paul together, you know, for games there, and now we get to do it together at the major league level. So of course, over the span of time, you develop relationships with these players. Some of them you could describe as friendships. Some of them are more professional working relationships, but you spend enough time with anybody and you develop relationships with them. And I think the key to that, that I don't think about it, and I hope they don't think about it this way either, but I don't think about it as Jake broadcaster, Bobby Witt Jr. player. I really try to think about it as Jake human and Bobby Witt Jr. human. He's a person who is going through young adulthood and life in very similar ways that I am. And, you know, the only difference between us is that he's putting up historic numbers on the field that have barely ever been seen before in Major League Baseball. And I'm describing it upstairs. But other than that, we have a lot in common. And so I think it's important when you talk about building relationships with players that you strip out the player part of it and you just try and build a relationship as a person.
Yeah, so could you just take us through the day in the life as you on a game day?
Sure. A normal game, let's say it's a 7 o'clock first pitch at Kauffman Stadium. I'll probably get to the ballpark sometime between 1:30 and 2 o'clock. I like to get to the ballpark about an hour before the clubhouse opens. Every day the clubhouse is open to media for 50 minutes, and that's a time where we can go in and talk to players. Unless we can see them out on the field. But I try to get to the ballpark about an hour before that clubhouse window, which is about 50 minutes. So I'll get to the ballpark. I'll do some more prep work. I'll read up on some storylines. I'll talk to a few people. Then I'll go downstairs to the clubhouse. I'll find some players that I might have a question for about something that happened or just try and catch up with a coach or two. Then we'll go outside of the dugout where the manager has his press conference for the Royals. That's Matt Quatrero. And he talks to the media for about 10 to 15 minutes every day. And we kind of talk to him about whatever's on our minds. And he gives us some insight. From there, the Royals have batting practice. And depending on the day, I'll watch all of batting practice and try and find another player or coach and have some conversations. Or maybe there's a front office member who's in the dugout that I want to ask a question of. And then usually around 5 o'clock, 5:15-ish, I'll head back upstairs and I'll finish filling out my scorebook, which will have the lineups in it. It'll have some relevant notes. It'll have maybe a story or two, or maybe I write down some notes based on the conversations that I just had with some of the players and coaches. Between 5:30 and first pitch, it kind of gets a little bit flexible. Maybe I'll go talk to the other team's broadcasters and try and learn some more information about their players or what they've had going on, or just say hello because they're good friends of mine. You try and find some time to eat dinner. I usually try and carve out about 20 to 30 minutes. Sometimes I'm successful. Sometimes I'm not. Our pregame show starts about 40 minutes prior to first pitch for a 7:10 first pitch. Our pregame coverage starts at 6:30. So I'll try and be in my seat in the booth by the time the pregame show starts so I can listen to all of the pregame show, the player interviews that we have, the manager interview that we have, other conversations that we're having in the booth before the game. Right before first pitch is the first time that I go on the air and I welcome everybody to the broadcast. I kind of set up the matchup. I'll give the weather. I might describe the uniforms if I'll have time. And then it's my honor to toss the play-by-play over to the voice of the Royals, the Hall of Famer, Denny Matthews. And then we're off and running with the broadcast all the way through the end of the game. We go to the post-game show. I listen to the manager's post-game press conference. The post-game show wraps up. I head home, and then we do it all again the next day.
Whoa, that sounds like a great 6 months to have if you're just an MLB broadcaster. And our last question in this segment, now that you've done TV and radio, what are the key differences between the two?
The biggest difference between calling a game on television and calling a game on radio is what your audience can see. On the radio, your audience can't see anything. They are pure listeners, which means that you have to describe everything. You have to describe the uniforms. You have to describe that the pitcher is right-handed and the batter is left-handed. You have to tell them when a pitch is coming. Here's the pitch. And that the pitch is a fastball over the low outside corner for a called strike. You have to tell them where the defense is playing, that the shortstop is shaded up the middle, but the center fielder is playing a few steps into the gap in left center. And when a ball's in play, you have to describe everything about that batted ball, a chopper to the left side on four hops to the shortstop, backhands chest high, and sidearms to throw over to first. that beats the runner by a step. All of those things are vital for a radio broadcast. On TV, you can take a lot of that out because your audience can see what's happening. They can see the pitcher. They can see the batter. They can see the pitch coming home. They can see where the ball's hit, who it's hit to, how they're fielding it, how they're throwing it. And so the difference between radio and TV primarily is on radio, you are describing the picture. You are creating the picture with your words. On television, you are writing and creating the caption for the picture that everybody is seeing. That's the key difference.
So on to the final segment. I'm just going to ask you just some quick questions. And if you could just say the answer that just pops to your mind, it's just going to be three short questions. So the first question is, who have been the coolest players you've interviewed?
I did an interview with Hall of Famer Lee Smith once when I was in minor league baseball. He was pretty awesome.
What is the nicest stadium you've been to?
I love Petco Park in San Diego. And I love, you know what, I'll give an honorable mention to Oracle Park in San Francisco. And that is omitting my home ballpark of Kauffman Stadium, yep, that I do love.
What's been the nicest visitor's locker room that you've seen?
Oh, that's a really good one. I don't always go into the visitor's clubhouse when I'm on the road. The Cubs recently redid theirs, and that's a pretty impressive space. The Atlanta Braves, they've got a really nice home clubhouse.
What's the favorite booth you've called from?
I loved the booth in Seattle. It was a great vantage point. It was a beautiful night. That was a really good visiting booth. I happen to think, and this is, you know, outside my bias, that the Kauffman Stadium broadcast booths are the best in baseball in terms of their vantage point.
And for our next question, and who is going to win the NLCS and ALCS happening tonight and maybe even tomorrow?
Well, as far as the ALCS is concerned, that has been such a fun series, and the road team has won every single game, so why not have that continue? I think if Max Scherzer pitches like Max Scherzer can pitch, maybe not like he did in his last start, but I'll take the Rangers to win the ALCS, and I'll take the Phillies to win the NLCS. I think they're just that much better than the Diamondbacks. As fun as that team has been, the Phillies top to bottom are a really, really good team.
And one last question for today as the period's winding down. What are some tips for us as we try to become broadcasters?
It's cliche, but keep doing what you're doing. Keep reaching out to people and learning what you can and taking those lessons and then applying them to the things that you're doing. Get as many reps as possible. Find your own voice and get comfortable with your own voice. I'll tell you one specific thing that I did when I was with WDOT in high school that I think really helped me. There was a game that we played in Radio 1 and Radio 2 with Mr. Clapp where he would give us a topic and you'd have to talk about that topic.
Yep, we do that still.
60 seconds, without using any crutch words. And that game, I think, sets such an incredible and important foundation for any aspiring broadcaster. I would really focus on that and get really good at talking about grapes for a minute without using any of those crutch words. Highly recommend, putting some energy into that game and getting really good at it.
Jake, thank you so much for joining us today. We hope that you have a great off season and good luck for the rest of your broadcasting career.
Zach, Gavin, thank you guys so much. This was a lot of fun.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
And that was Sports in the Morning with our interview, Jake Eisenberg. We'll see you guys maybe on Friday, maybe next week, as this is Sports in the Morning, WDOT Port Washington with Zach and Gavin. We'll see you.